Chapter 44. Gentleman completely over the wall onto the bed beneath, where, after crushing three gooseberry bushes and a rose tree, he finally alighted at full length. You can't hurt yourself, I hope, sir? Said Sam, in a loud whisper, as soon as he had recovered from the surprise consequent upon the mysterious disappearance of his master. I have not hurt myself, Sam, certainly, replied Mr. Pickwick, from the other side of the wall, but I rather think that you have hurt me. I hope not, sir, said Sam. Never mind, said Mr. Pickwick, rising, it's nothing but a few scratches. Go away, or we shall be overheard. Goodbye, sir. Goodbye. With stealthy steps Sam Weller departed, leaving Mr. Pickwick alone in the garden. Lights occasionally appeared in the different windows of the house, or glanced from the staircases, as if the inmates were retiring to rest. Not caring to go too near the door until the appointed time, Mr. Pickwick crouched into an angle of the wall and awaited its arrival. It was a situation which might well have depressed the spirits of many a man. Mr. Pickwick, however, felt neither depression nor misgiving. He knew that his purpose was in the main a good one, and he placed implicit reliance on the high-minded job. It was dull, certainly, not to say dreary, but a contemplative man can always employ himself in meditation. Mr. Pickwick had meditated himself into a doze when he was roused by the chimes of the neighboring church ringing out the hour 11:30. That's the time, thought Mr. Pickwick, getting cautiously on his feet. He looked up at the house. The lights had disappeared, and the shutters were closed all in bed, no doubt. He walked on tiptoe to the door, and gave a gentle tap. 2 or 3 minutes passing without any reply, he gave another tap rather louder, and then another rather louder than that. At length the sound of feet was audible upon the stairs, and then the light of a candle shone through the keyhole of the door. There was a good deal of unchaining and unbolting, and the door was slowly opened. Now the door opened outwards, and as the door opened wider and wider, Mr. Pickwick receded behind it, more and more. What was his astonishment, when he just peeped out, by way of caution, to see that the person who had opened it was not Job Trotter, but a servant girl with a candle in her hand. Mr. Pickwick drew in his head again, with the swiftness displayed by that admirable melodramatic performer, Punch, when he lies in wait for the flat-headed comedian with the tin box of music. It must have been the cat, Sarah, said the girl, addressing herself to someone in the house. Puss, 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 tit, tit. But no animal being decoyed by these blandishments, the girl slowly closed the door, and refastened it, leaving Mr. Pickwick drawn up straight against the wall. This is very curious, thought Mr. Pickwick. They are sitting up beyond their usual hour, I suppose. Extremely unfortunate, that they should have chosen this night, of all others, for such a purpose exceedingly. And with these thoughts, Mr. Pickwick cautiously retired to the angle of the wall in which he had been before ensconced, waiting until such time as he might deem it safe to repeat the signal. He had not been here 5 minutes, when a vivid flash of lightning was followed by a loud peal of thunder that crashed and rolled away in the distance with a terrific noise. Then came another flash of lightning, brighter than the other, and a second peal of thunder louder than the first. And then down came the rain, with a force and fury that swept everything before it. Mr. Pickwick was perfectly aware that a tree is a very dangerous neighbor in a thunderstorm. He had a tree on his right, a tree on his left, a third before him, and a fourth behind. If he remained where he was, he might fall the victim of an accident. If he showed himself in the center of the garden, he might be consigned to a constable. Once or twice he tried to scale the wall, but having no other legs this time than those with which nature had furnished him, the only effect of his struggles was to inflict a variety of very unpleasant gratings on his knees and shins, and to throw him into a state of the most profuse perspiration. "What a dreadful situation," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, pausing to wipe his brow after this exercise. He looked up, but the house all was dark. They must be gone to bed now. He would try the signal again. He walked on tiptoe across the moist gravel, and tapped at the door. He held his breath, and listened at the keyhole. No reply. Very odd. Another knock. He listened again. There was a low whispering inside, and then a voice cried, "Who's there?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, that's not job, apostrophe, thought Mr. Pickwick, hastily drawing himself straight up against the wall again. It's a woman. Apostrophe, he had scarcely had time to form this conclusion, when the window above stairs was thrown up, and three or four female voices repeated the query, "Who's there?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick dared not move hand or foot. It was clear that the whole establishment was roused. He made up his mind to remain where he was until the alarm had subsided, and then by a supernatural effort to get over the wall or perish in the attempt. Like all Mr. Pickwick's determinations, this was the best that could be made under the circumstances. But, unfortunately, it was founded upon the assumption that they would not venture to open the door again. What was his discomfiture when he heard the chain and bolts withdrawn, and saw the door slowly opening, wider and wider. He retreated into the corner, step by step, but do what he would, the interposition of his own person prevented its being opened to its utmost width. "Who's there?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, screamed a numerous chorus of treble voices from the staircase inside, consisting of the spinster lady of the establishment, three teachers, five female servants, and 30 boarders, all half-dressed and in a forest of curl papers. Of course Mr. Pickwick didn't say who was there. And then the burden of the chorus changed into lore. "I am so frightened. Apostrophe, cook, apostrophe," said the lady abbess, who took care to be on the top stair, the very last of the group, "cook, why don't you go a little way into the garden?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, please, ma'am, I don't like, apostrophe," responded the cook. "Lor, what a stupid thing that cook is!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said the 30 boarders. "Cook, apostrophe," said the lady abbess, with great dignity, "don't answer me, if you please. I insist upon your looking into the garden immediately." Apostrophe, here the cook began to cry, and the housemaid said it was a shame. Apostrophe, apostrophe, for which partisanship she received a month's warning on the spot. "Do you hear, cook?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the lady abbess, stamping her foot impatiently. "Don't you hear your missus, cook?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the three teachers. "What an impudent thing that cook is!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the 30 boarders. The unfortunate cook, thus strongly urged, advanced a step or two, and holding her candle just where it prevented her from seeing at all, declared there was nothing there, and it must have been the wind. The door was just going to be closed in consequence, when an inquisitive boarder, who had been peeping between the hinges, set up a fearful screaming, which called back the cook and housemaid, and all the more adventurous, in no time. "What is the matter with Miss Smithers?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the lady abbess, as the aforesaid Miss Smithers proceeded to go into hysterics of four young lady power. "Lor, Miss Smithers, dear," apostrophe, said the other 29 boarders. "Oh, the man behind the door," apostrophe, apostrophe, screamed Miss Smithers. The lady abbess no sooner heard this appalling cry than she retreated to her own bedroom, double locked the door, and fainted away comfortably. The boarders, and the teachers, and the servants, fell back upon the stairs, and upon each other, and never was such a screaming, and fainting, and struggling beheld. In the midst of the tumult, Mr. Pickwick emerged from his concealment and presented himself amongst them. "Ladies, dear ladies," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Oh, he says we're dear," apostrophe cried the oldest and ugliest teacher. "Oh, the wretch!" "Ladies," apostrophe roared Mr. Pickwick, rendered desperate by the danger of his situation. "Hear me. I am no robber. I want the lady of the house." Apostrophe, "Oh, what a ferocious monster!" Apostrophe screamed another teacher. "He wants Miss Tompkins." Apostrophe, here there was a general scream. "Ring the alarm bell, somebody." Apostrophe cried a dozen voices. Don't, apostrophe shouted Mr. Pickwick. "Look at me. Do I look like a robber? My dear ladies, you may bind me hand and leg, or lock me up in a closet, if you like. Only hear what I have got to say, only hear me. Apostrophe, how did you come in our garden?" Apostrophe faltered the housemaid. "Call the lady of the house, and I'll tell her everything," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, exerting his lungs to the utmost pitch. "Call her, only be quiet, and call her, and you shall hear everything." Apostrophe, it might have been Mr. Pickwick's appearance, or it might have been his manner, or it might have been the temptation irresistible to a female mind of hearing something at present enveloped in mystery, that reduced the more reasonable portion of the establishment, some four individuals, to a state of comparative quiet. By them it was proposed, as a test of Mr. Pickwick's sincerity, that he should immediately submit to personal restraint, and that gentleman having consented to hold a conference with Miss Tompkins, from the interior of a closet in which the day boarders hung their bonnets and sandwich bags, he at once stepped into it, of his own accord, and was securely locked in. This revived the others, and Miss Tompkins having been brought to, and brought down, the conference began. "What did you do in my garden, man?" Apostrophe said Miss Tompkins, in a faint voice. "I came to warn you that one of your young ladies was going to elope tonight," apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, from the interior of the closet. "Elope!" apostrophe exclaimed Miss Tompkins, the three teachers, the 30 boarders, and the 5 servants. "Who with?" "Apostrophe your friend, Mr. Charles Fitzmarshall." "Apostrophe, my friend. I don't know any such person." "Apostrophe, well, Mr. Jingle, then." "Apostrophe, I never heard the name in my life." "Apostrophe, then, I have been deceived and deluded," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "I have been the victim of a conspiracy, a foul and base conspiracy. Send to the angel, my dear ma'am, if you don't believe me. Send to the angel for Mr. Pickwick's manservant, I implore you, ma'am." "Apostrophe, he must be respectable, he keeps a manservant," apostrophe said Miss Tompkins to the writing and ciphering governess. "It's my opinion, Miss Tompkins," apostrophe said the writing and ciphering governess, "that his manservant keeps him. I think he's a madman, Miss Tompkins, and the other's his keeper." "Apostrophe, I think you are very right, Miss Gwynn," apostrophe responded Miss Tompkins. "Let 2 of the servants repair to the angel, and let the others remain here, to protect us." Apostrophe, so 2 of the servants were dispatched to the angel in search of Mr. Samuel Weller, and the remaining 3 stopped behind to protect Miss Tompkins, and the 3 teachers, and the 30 boarders. And Mr. Pickwick sat down in the closet, beneath a grove of sandwich bags, and awaited the return of the messengers, with all the philosophy and fortitude he could summon to his aid. An hour and a half elapsed before they came back, and when they did come, Mr. Pickwick recognized, in addition to the voice of Mr. Samuel Weller, 2 other voices, the tones of which struck familiarly on his ear. But whose they were, he could not for the life of him call to mind. A very brief conversation ensued. The door was unlocked. Mr. Pickwick stepped out of the closet and found himself in the presence of the whole establishment of Westgate House, Mr. Samuel Weller, and old Wardle, and his destined son-in-law, Mr. Trundle. "My dear friend," said Mr. Pickwick, running forward and grasping Wardle's hand, "my dear friend, pray, for heaven's sake, explain to this lady the unfortunate and dreadful situation in which I am placed. You must have heard it from my servant. Say, at all events, my dear fellow, that I am neither a robber nor a madman. I have said so, my dear friend. I have said so already," replied Mr. Wardle, shaking the right hand of his friend, while Mr. Trundle shook the left. "And whoever says, or has said, he is," interposed Mr. Weller, stepping forward, "says that which is not the truth, but so far from it, on the contrary, quite the reverse. And if there's any number o' men on these here premises as has said so, I shall be wery happy to give 'em all a wery convincing proof o' their being mistaken, in this here wery room, if these wery respectable ladies LL have the goodness to retire, and order 'em up, one at a time." Having delivered this defiance with great volubility, Mr. Weller struck his open palm emphatically with his clenched fist, and winked pleasantly on Miss Tomkins, the intensity of whose horror at it, supposing it within the bounds of possibility that there could be any men on the premises of Westgate House establishment for young ladies, it is impossible to describe. Mr. Pickwick's explanation having already been partially made. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.